What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson. Let's get this started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This week, we're going to be talking about endurance training and some of the benefits of that. But first, we want to check in. So what's been going on with you?
So last week, right after the podcast, I went and bought some raw goat milk. So if you've been listening to the podcast for a while now, you probably realize that I have a little bit of a sensitivity to dairy. It's a bit of an understatement. But yeah, I'm trying
to don't handle it well at all.
Yeah, I've been trying to figure it out because I do well with cheese. Well, some cheeses. Butter doesn't seem to impact me at all. But pretty much anything else that's dairy related just destroys me. So I decided to try some raw goat milk. And the reason I went with raw is the pasteurization process, just like the extreme heat that the milk is exposed to, can denature some of the proteins. So raw milk doesn't go through that. So I was thinking maybe that should have, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a better reaction with me.
Yeah, because the denaturing can increase like the allergenic properties of the milk, right?
Yeah, it's not the same thing as what you'd find in nature.
Exactly.
So it's a little bit of just like a brand new substance to our bodies that we're not used to. And then I went with goat milk instead of cow's milk because it's a different type of protein. It's an A2 protein instead of an A1. I don't know a whole lot about it. I just know that most dairy cows in the United States are A1 protein. So, on a hunch, thought I'd go with the different type.
I know a little bit. I know the A2, it's pretty much one amino acid off from A1. But in our GI tract, in the A1 milk, the affinity of the bond between those amino acids is pretty weak. So it tends to get cleaved there. But in A2 milk, I forget the specific amino acids, the bond is a little bit stronger. So the peptide doesn't get cleaved in that spot. So it stays pretty much intact. So a similar argument to just even like pasteurization. It doesn't denature that protein. The protein stays intact. So A2 is a little bit more of a stable casein protein.
Is it more natural as well?
It is.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, the A1 gene is like a mutation that occurred fairly recently.
Okay. That's why it's only, or mostly found here.
It's mostly found here, exactly. Okay. Yeah. All the cows from like Africa and Asia, they're all, they're A2 cows. Yeah.
Yeah, and then like camel's milk, bison milk, that's all A2 as well.
Yeah.
Those are getting more and more popular, especially in your like health food stores. Okay, so did my experiment, drank, I think it was like a quart or like a liter, whatever.
It was a glass jar.
Yeah.
It was big though.
Yeah, it was a good size. It was at least like two glasses full. Because if I'm going to do an experiment, I want to make sure this is either going to wreck me or no effect.
You're going all in.
And unfortunately, it wrecked me. But at least I know. Like, you know, that's the point. That's why we experiment, is so you know. And I have a definite answer to that. And the answer is I cannot handle goat milk, raw goat milk. So I don't really know what it is. Some of the older cheeses is kind of like the only thing I can really handle. I'll just keep experimenting and find out.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
I was hopeful. I was really thinking you were going to handle it okay.
Yeah, that's why I did so much of it, because I was thinking, yeah, I probably should do well with this. But just to make sure, just overdo it. And nope, body didn't like it very much.
Yeah, milk is not your friend.
Yeah, so that's what's new with me. What about you?
Yeah. I just tried that raw goat milk today. I just looked at the container. It's 1 liter container, so if that matters to you, if you know the metric system better than us. But I really liked it. I thought it was pretty good.
It tasted just like normal milk to me.
Now, it tasted a little different to me, a little bit sweeter. And it might be because I picked it up because it was on sale. And it's been fermenting a little bit, so it's a little bit like almost sour. I guess I shouldn't have said sweeter, sour. But still tasted good. The reason I actually did that was not in the program. It definitely wasn't intended. But doing this little cut that I'm doing, I knew eventually I was going to hit some sort of wall. Like, I knew my performance was going to be affected at some point. You know, I couldn't stay feeling great all the time. So today I worked out chest, shoulders, and triceps, and I'm supposed to do my high intensity cardio on my spin bike. And I noticed while I was lifting the weights, I felt fine. You know, energy was okay, but the weights felt heavy as shit. I was just like, because I was just messing around fairly, I mean, the weights weren't heavy, they were fairly light, but they just felt heavy. And I was like, fuck, like, that's not a good sign. You know what I mean? So, but I grinded through the workout. I got done with it. And I was like, okay. And I got on the spin bike, and the day prior, I had done, it was a rest day yesterday. No, it wasn't. It was a leg day yesterday, but on leg days, I do.
Those are like complete opposites.
Yeah, like the hardest day yesterday. This actually contributes to it. So I had a leg day yesterday, and at the end of my leg days, I do steady state cardio, and I'm up to 50 minutes at the end of the session. I've been adding 5 minutes every week, so by the end of this, I'll be doing an hour of steady state cardio. And so on the spin bike, there's a little knob that you turn to increase resistance. And when I'm doing steady state, I have the increased resistance on pretty light so I can just keep the pace going. So it's not that hard to spin the wheels. But I got on the bike this morning to spin the wheel. I mean, after my workout this morning to spin the wheels. And I was like, holy shit, I could barely spin the wheels. And the resistance was like barely up. And I was like, oh no, like this is not a good sign. And so I was like, all right, I cut back the resistance to nothing. I did a little warm up. And then when my time came to actually do my sprint, I turned up the resistance as hard as I could, and the wheels just, like, locked. Like, I couldn't move the pedals. I was just like, oh. Like, I didn't have that gear. I just didn't. Yeah. I was like, damn it. I was like, okay. Let me reset. So I went back. I did another, like, a minute and a half warm-up. Then I tried to go again, and I just didn't have it. And I was like, man, I just didn't have it today. So I cut it back and just called it quits. I was like, you know, this is just not my day.
No, that's smart that you did it that way, because yeah, if you don't have it, you just don't have it, and you don't want to just push yourself too far. That's where injuries happen.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad I listened to my body in that sense, and I contribute that to, first off, yesterday being a leg day. Like, my legs just don't have that, they just don't have that reserve. They just don't have that get up and go in them right now. They're still recovering, and on top of being pretty restricted as far as calories go, for it's been 5 weeks now, so... From here on out, I'm going to make a little adjustment, and every leg day, the following day, I'm going to incorporate a rest day. So I can get my lower body a rest, and then I'll start my new week again after that. But I guess to get back to the goat milk, so on the way, the leaner you get, you need to increase your refeed days just to keep your metabolism going. So I felt so shitty today for the workout and kind of just beating myself up. I was like, man, I need to switch something up. So I saw at the store the goat milk was half off. That's because it expired today. And I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to buy the goat milk today. And I'm sure, I don't know how many calories is a liter of goat milk?
You know, I didn't even really think about it. Maybe 400 or 500.
You think? Okay, I have no clue. Actually, because that jar doesn't have a nutrition label.
Yeah, the thing is completely blank on it. It just says blank. Raw goat milk. That's it. That's about it.
So, yeah, maybe you can look it up, a liter of a goat milk. But, yeah, so I went to the store. Today's another lean day, so it's just white fish and beef heart. But I incorporated a liter of goat milk to my post-workout meal. So I did increase the calories, but I don't know how many. Does it say?
About 600. Roughly.
Yeah, so, and that's all, you know, protein, carbs, fats. So I'm hoping that kind of boosts my recovery a little bit today. Hopefully I'll feel better tomorrow with my workout and I'll get after it a little bit, you know? It was bound to happen though, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the first thing that came to mind once you said you worked out legs yesterday and you just didn't have it today, I was like, you're probably just taxed from yesterday's workout.
Mm-hmm.
That was like my first go-to, but yeah, especially if you're depriving yourself of all these calories. Are you going to do so two like refeeding days, or are you just removing your refeeding day?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm just counting today as like an extra calorie day, not even like a refeed day, okay. Just because it's not even close to my refeed day. Actually, I don't know if it's a record, but my last refeed day, I had 7.5 pounds of meat in one day.
Damn, that's a lot.
I was actually pretty proud of myself. Did I go to sleep wanting to throw up? You sure did. Did I feel pregnant all day? Yes, I did. But I had 5 pounds of ground beef, and I had lamb too. Worked in there. We went out to dinner at some Indian spot. They have a really good like pasture raised lamb, so it was delicious. But it was a lot of food. But I think that's a record. I don't think I was shooting for 8 pounds. That was my goal. I was kind of bummed I didn't get it. But I couldn't get it. Like, I couldn't eat any more than that.
All right, so you got goals for next week, then?
Well, it is 8 pounds. That is the goal. I want to hit 8 pounds, so we'll see how it goes. But I just need to honestly start. I need to eat earlier. Like, I had my first meal around, like, 7. Because I still am waking up stupid early at, like, 3:30 or so. So if I eat earlier and eat later, I can squeeze in more calories that way. So
do the old trick, eat every 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. I was eating every time I was like, I felt my appetite come back a little bit. I ate.
So as you had some room in there?
Yeah, I was like, okay, eat. Yeah, exactly. So, and yeah, I guess that's all that's going on with me. I'm not feeling the diet for sure. It's just today is really the first day, so it's a good day, I guess, to record this. But that's okay. I only have 3 more weeks. Literally, I think it's only 21 days, maybe 22 days. And besides that, everything's going good on my end.
So, like, with 7.5 pounds, what is that? Like, 7,000 calories, roughly?
It was a little over 7,000, yeah. Okay. And actually, I probably undershot it because I put sour cream in all that ground beef. And I didn't count the calories on the sour cream. Just because I wasn't measuring it.
So, round it up to 8,000? Yeah.
Yeah.
You're eating 8,000 calories, not every day, but once a week, mm-hmm. and you're still losing weight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, just the whole calories in, calories out model, like, that should be pretty good evidence that it's not the best model.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just proving it every week, literally. Yeah. And, yeah, I woke up for sure, like, in a puddle of sweat the next day. Like, I was so hot all night, you know? So, and that happens, you know, those uncoupling proteins in your mitochondria, that's what they're there for. You know, they uncouple that hydrogen gradient and release all that extra energy as heat. Because there's no way my body's using 8,000 calories. Like, I'm not running a marathon. You know what I mean? So it has to do something with that. And that's exactly what it does. It just releases that chemical gradient as heat. So, but yeah. You want to get into your routine? Because that's what I'm doing. I'm doing more of a bodybuilding split, protein sparing, modify fast. But you're doing more, you're looking at endurance gains and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're cutting. I'm trying to just increase my endurance. Well, that's going to go into today's topic.
Yeah.
So the way you really measure endurance, in a lab, you measure it by VO2 max, which is basically just how much oxygen can your body use. So how much are you breathing in? How much oxygen are your muscles using? It's an important measurement, but it's not the end-all measurement. So just because somebody has a higher VO2 max than somebody else, it doesn't make them a better endurance athlete. But you need to, there is like a minimum VO2 max you need to have to be like a top athlete.
How do they, like, what's the measurement? Like, what's the metric?
So there's a couple different ways you can measure it. Mm-hmm. So like if you don't have a lot of equipment, there's a lot of like little protocols you can do, which mm-hmm. are just guesses. There's the Bruce protocol, which is on a treadmill. Mm-hmm. There's also you like run a mile and a half and then they measure it, like measure your time. And that gives you kind of like a rough estimate.
Like you go all out?
Yes.
Okay.
All of these you go to fatigue.
Got it.
So the Bruce protocol, they have a couple different ones, but depending on your fitness level, they put you on an incline on a treadmill and then you start walking. And then each stage, they increase the incline, increase the speed until you basically fall off the treadmill.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Well, you don't, I mean, like you don't literally fall off.
But until you give up.
Until you have to like pick yourself up.
Yeah.
So you go all out. You can also do it on a bike. Okay. They have different ways because like this, they use this testing for everybody.
So when you see pictures of somebody like on a bike and they have like a big mask around their face, that's usually what they're measuring, right?
Yes, that would be VO2 max as well. Mm. That is the gold standard. But okay. those pieces of equipment are very expensive. Mm-hmm. So you're not every lab's going to have that.
Because that they're literally measuring your breaths and sending it through a machine, right?
Yeah, and they're also able to actually track how many carbs you're burning, how many fat calories you're burning, how much
protein. Oh, really?
All off of that. Because you know like a breath ketone meter?
Yeah.
How they can measure your ketones mm-hmm. levels? This is the same type of equipment.
Oh, that's cool. You know, you're going to have to, I guess, teach me too. Because I don't know a lot about this world. Because I never really gave a shit about endurance.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, it is important, but it's not super important. Because you do have better endurance, even though you don't really care about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the best way to increase your VO2 max, if you live at sea level, is going to be HIIT training. High intensity interval training. So you do that all the time.
I do. And it fucking sucks.
Oh, it does. That's the way it's supposed to be, though. You want it to be, like, high intensity. That's why it starts with high intensity. High intensity means you can only do it for 10 to 20, maybe 30 seconds at the most. But you're really trying to shoot for that 10 to 20 second high intensity. So, like, 100% effort. And then by the time you do, like, 6 intervals of that, the 7th one, you don't have anything left in the tank.
Yeah, I remember like we set up one of these workout routines for one of our clients and she came back to us and she said, oh, I really like the high intensity on the bike. Like it's really good. And I was like, oh, you're not doing it right.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you shouldn't come back to me and be like, oh, I loved that.
So just yesterday, my form had hit training. I ran with my dogs to the dog park, just a nice little warm-up. And then the city that I live in, for whatever reason, has zero hills in the entire damn city.
All flat.
Except for at the dog park. There's a little nice little incline. So I find a spot where it's about a 20-second sprint for me. Time the first one, make sure I'm like, okay, I got that right. And then it just did, I was shooting for 8, but by the time I got to 7, that 7th one was probably like twice as long as that first one. I was like, you know what? I think I'm done now.
Yeah.
My legs were just fully pumped. I
felt like you were drowning.
I was sprinting, but it probably looked like I was walking.
Yeah.
Mm. So I was like, yeah, that's what high intensity means. Like your 7th set is nowhere near your first set.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure you're doing that. And what that the high intensity interval training is going to do is it really increases your cardiac output, which is basically just how much blood can your heart pump throughout the body. So that's a very important thing for endurance athletes, because if you can't get oxygen to your muscles can't use the oxygen.
Because that's the limiting factor, right?
It's one of them.
Okay.
Yeah, at sea level, that's the major limiting factor.
Okay.
And I use the at sea level thing because if you're not at sea level, you're going to have less oxygen. So getting pumping blood to your muscles isn't as important there. It's more of extracting that oxygen from your blood, which is the other way. And the way you increase that is through steady state training.
Okay.
Which is what most people think of like normal cardio.
Yeah, walking on treadmill, something like that.
Yeah, that's steady state that you were talking about, 50 minutes on a bike, something along those lines.
Oh, that cake. I mean, it kind of sucks. Like, you'll be drenched in sweat, but it's so much easier than high intensity.
Oh, yeah.
You know, oh, my God. Walk in the park.
It's mindless. You can watch some TV.
Chill. I can read while I do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's enjoyable. Yeah. Especially, like, you can talk while you're doing it, so you can work out with somebody for that steady state training.
Yeah.
The high intensity training, that's something else. Like, every time I do that, if I don't feel like I'm going to throw up, I know I didn't go right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty clear sign.
And it's weird how you really have to get your mind right if you really want to get all you can out of high intensity training. You have to really push yourself, because it doesn't come natural. Your brain doesn't want to go that hard. Like, it will tell you to dial it back. It will make you uncomfortable. Your lungs will burn. Your legs will burn. You will be uncomfortable, and you have to grind through it and just know that you are doing it for a reason and you're doing it for results, and then you can push through that. But it's just as much as a mental battle as it is a physical one.
Oh, for sure. Like, when you hear people training and they hit that wall, usually it's with the high intensity stuff, not that low intensity or moderate intensity. Yeah, so you just have to make sure you can just push through that. Act like there's a lion chasing you, something along those lines, whatever little tricks you got to use. So if you to really increase your cardiac output, you want your heart rate to be able to go as hard as it can. So, like, when you're doing this high intensity training, yes, you are definitely training your muscles at a very high intensity, but you're also training your heart, which is what you really want to work on. You want to get your heart to be able to pump as much blood as possible, get your heart as strong as possible. HIIT training is also pretty popular with cardiac patients, cardiac rehab patients as well. This Bruce protocol that I was talking about earlier, maybe they wouldn't have somebody sprinting at like a 10% incline for that Bruce protocol, but they'll be walking on an incline.
So for them, it'll be hard.
Yes. I mean, that's a sprint to them. If you're, you know, if you just had a
if you're that compromised.
Yeah, you just had a heart attack, something along those lines, you're not, your cardiac output is going to be definitely decreased quite a bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, this isn't just for elite athletes. This is going to be for everybody. Increasing your cardiac output, it has so many benefits for all different people. So that's something you definitely, everybody should be looking into, everybody should be working on. Strength training. When you're just lifting weights, normally when you lift weights, you're going, 30 seconds for a set, something along those lines.
And then unless you're trying to manipulate it with, like, negatives, but for the most part, yeah, not that long.
Yes, standard weightlifting sessions, about 30 seconds, which is pretty much right in line with that HIIT training. So a lot of bodybuilders, those type of athletes, will still have pretty good cardiac output without really, you know, spending a lot of time and effort trying to build that up, because they don't need to. You don't really need to be in the best shape in the world to stand up on stage. You just need to look good.
Yeah.
You know, you're not really, your lungs aren't really working that hard, or you're just standing up there.
Just a flex.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm just rereading this mitochondria book, and it's really, I think it's a great book, but it does touch on exercise and overall like mitochondrial health. So doing exercise, specifically like a steady state cardio and HIIT training cardio, like we were talking about, good for your heart. It's good for your heart. Mainly it's good for your mitochondria as well. So when your body gets that stimulus, it has a high ATP demand, which like you said, you're sprinting, your body needs ATP. But it's also kind of a catch-22 with working out, is your body is producing more free radicals. Like, you are damaging your body while you train. So when your mitochondria get that signal of high free radicals and high ATP demand, it gets a signal of something called fission. So one mitochondria will become two, and also biogenesis. So your body will literally create more mitochondria because it sees they're not adequate. There's not enough mitochondria here to meet this ATP demand. There's not enough components of the electron transport chain to meet this energy demand. So your body will literally make new healthy mitochondria from that stimulus. And that's one of the main reasons why working out can be so healthy. Because once our mitochondria go, everything follows. So we need to keep our mitochondria healthy, and working out does that. It's a great way to keep your mitochondria healthy.
Yeah, that's a great point. And then adding on to that, where you're just talking about how there's all these byproducts, these free radicals, a great way to increase your body's ability to get rid of those free radicals. One of the main things is like your body creates lactate when you exercise. Everybody's heard of lactic acid and how that prevents you from working out. Well, a great way to build up your lactate threshold is through that steady state exercise. So you do want to go, you know, on those hour-long bike rides, those hour-long jogs at a steady state, and your body just gets better at increasing that lactate threshold. And then also, at the same time, your body gets so much better at extracting that oxygen from the blood into your muscles. So you're killing two birds with one stone by doing that. And then also, when you're going at a slow pace, your technique should be a lot better, and you should be focusing on increasing your technique as opposed to HIIT training, where you're just sprinting.
If you're it looks ugly.
Yeah, you're just going as hard as you can. Normally, your running form isn't perfect at a sprint unless you're Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
So, when you're going at that slow, steady state, your technique better be fine. If it's not perfect, then, like, so you just never have perfect technique.
Yeah, ever. And you'll pay a price for that eventually. Your hips will hurt, your knees will hurt, your ankles will hurt. All those joints will be affected.
Back, something. Mm-hmm. Shoulders. It's kind of weird. After a couple of my longer runs, like, my upper back was sore. I don't really know why, but I don't know. The swinging my arms back and forth. I must have some sort of bad posture while I'm running.
Yeah, I don't realize it. Yeah.
Yeah. After, you know, 6 miles.
So what's the longest? You're increasing your distance, right? Every week.
I've been trying to. The farthest I've gone is 6 miles so far.
Okay.
I'm really going to focus on increasing that in the next coming up months.
Okay.
Once I get in a little bit better shape and a little bit better technique while I'm running.
Okay.
So right now I've really been focusing on increasing my cardiac output. So I've been doing a lot of HIIT type training, a couple of strength training sessions here and there just to make sure that my muscles stay strong. We talked about this in an earlier podcast. The most important factor with decreasing the chance of injury is strength. So I want to make sure that my strength doesn't go completely to the wayside while I'm trying to increase. Yeah,
keep that muscle.
Yeah, especially my lower body. With the type of diet that you want to be on for like an endurance type of athlete would be ketogenic, carnivore, anything low carb. I know that might sound a little strange because of all the carb loading
that everybody talks about. Yeah, that doesn't sound right.
The carb loading makes sense if you're going to be doing like a 2 to 3 mile run. But if you're doing like a 26 mile run or a 100 mile run or something crazy that's going to take you over 2 hours, those carbs are going to be gone so fast. Even if you do have a carb loading day, you're if you're lucky, storing an extra 500 calories, you're going to burn through that so fast.
Yeah, there's no way you're storing that much. You just can't. I think at max, like, you probably store around 2,000 calories of glycogen in your body. But trust me, there's no way you're tapping into 2,000 calories at once. Your body wouldn't let you do that. So carb loading, like you said, unless there's a certain situation, but for the most part, it's useless. I just wouldn't do it.
The strategy I plan on using is I'm following a ketogenic diet. I'm going to go like actually zero carb for a few months, see how I like that, and if I do like it, I'm going to continue that for a few more months. But I'm going to go extremely low carb, and then the day of the race, right before it, I'm going to eat a high carb meal. That way I'll have both high ketones and high glucose.
For the first part?
Yeah, for the first couple miles.
Yeah, okay. Maybe, yeah, that sounds okay.
Maybe I'll be sprinting out the, like, you know, the, for the first mile, I might be in first place for a second, and then that...
Just enjoy it.
Yeah, that glucose is going to be gone, and then I'm going to fall back.
Yeah, it's actually funny. One of our clients just recently was talking to me about she needs carbs to run. She says when she does... I think she does... How long's a half marathon? 13 miles?
13.
Yeah, I think... So I think she did one of those, and she said after mile 7... She really noticed she crashes when she does a keto diet. And I was just like, it just didn't make sense to me, you know? And I was like, well, she did a keto diet without us before, kind of like guiding her. So I said, you keep doing it how we're doing it now, and I think you'll experience different results this time. Because that just, I don't know. Why do you think that would be?
The only thing I could think of is she's not as efficient of a fat burner as she probably thinks that she is. Mm-hmm. So all that reserve glycogen is gone. Probably about that 7 mile mark, and then she's only using fat and just doesn't have enough. She's not
good enough.
Yeah, she's not efficient enough as a fat burner to keep her going.
Yeah, I don't know if I asked her how long she was keto before she did these races, but I assume it wasn't that long or long enough to be a good fat burner. And also, I don't know if she was doing keto. I think she did keto, like all vegetables, a little bit of meat, instead of a lot of meat and a little bit of vegetables. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, there's other factors that go into it, too. If she starts off too fast, she can just burn out. So if she doesn't know how to pace herself, that's a major factor that goes into it. Something that I need to work on a lot is my just running technique. You want to be as efficient as possible. You don't want to have any wasted movement, any wasted energy. If you got to run 26 miles, that's hard enough as it is. You don't need to be heel striking on every run, slowing yourself down, swinging your arms side to side, wasting all this momentum going side to side that you have to stop yourself from doing. There's a lot of just running techniques that go into it as well. And if she's not practicing running 13 miles and she's only running 7 miles, 6 miles here or there, her body doesn't know how to pace itself. Yeah. So there's other factors that get into it other than just diet and exercise.
Yeah. Because I know she did blame the keto, but there definitely is more to it. Yeah.
It's funny. When somebody goes on a new diet, everything that happens in their life is because of the new diet.
Oh, God. We see that too often.
They won the lottery. It's because I went keto. I got fired from work. This damn keto diet.
I know. Yeah, I know. We see it all the time. People come to us like, oh, I have a headache. Oh, I don't feel good. Oh, what'd you do the night before? I went out and drank and ate this. So it's not the drinking and the shit food? No, it's a keto.
Yeah, you have the keto flu.
Okay.
Yep, you're not hungover.
Yeah, you're not hungover. You're not 45 and hungover as shit. But okay, that's fine. It's funny how that is, but that's okay. We're used to it.
Yeah, and another thing that could go into this as well. So the marathon I'm doing starts in the morning. So all my longer runs I'm trying to do in the morning. Let my body get used to, hey, it's early in the morning. You need to be prepared to run a long distance. That should be like that with any type of sport. If you're going to be playing basketball and all your games are at night, you shouldn't be practicing playing basketball in the morning. Your body doesn't need to be awake and, you know, at full, fully charged, ready to go at 10 in the morning if all your games are at 7 p.m. at night. So you should be practicing training your body at 7 o'clock at night so your body just gets used to it. We're creatures of habit, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's a great tip, too. VO2 max. You know, I thought that was a good talk, but I don't know a lot about that, so...
There's not a whole lot to VO2 max. You just need to get it. I believe for the Tour de France winners, like every single person that's won it since they've started measuring it has been over 55 on the VO2 max test. And I think it goes all the way to 80. Mm. That's a pretty big range.
Yeah.
So like if as long as you're above 50, 55, you're considered like an elite athlete. But it's not like me and you can get to 50, 55. It's that hard. I think when I tested in college, I was like at a 40 something. And I wasn't even in shape. And the day that we did it, I think I worked out legs beforehand.
You're just like fresh off the street.
Yeah, like I wasn't trained and like I didn't really take it. I didn't know we were testing for it that day or I would have taken a little bit more.
Got your mind right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure now my VO2 is probably close to 50. If it's not, it will be by the time of this race.
Oh, for sure.
It doesn't really matter a whole lot. I could have a VO2 max of 80, but if my running technique is shit, I'm not going to do very well.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a great point. Do you have a tip of the week?
Yeah, my tip of the week doesn't really go along with the endurance training, but I'm going to be using it this weekend. I'm going to be traveling out of town. So I've still got to keep up my training. I'm not going to take any days off, except if it's a recovery day. So my tip of the week is make lightweight feel heavy. So this is something I've been using for a long time. I know you use this as well.
Yep.
I work out at home sometimes. Sometimes I work out at the gym, kind of just depending. But if I'm working out at home, I only have 50-pound dumbbells. And those are good enough for a lot of exercises, but they're not good enough for everything. So a good way to make those weights actually, you know, feel heavy enough for me to get a good exercise out of, a good workout, I'll do a couple different things. Like the first thing you can go, or you, first thing you can try, is go really, really slow. Instead of just working on, A, increasing your weights, increasing your reps, just increase that time under tension and do like a body weight squat for like 30 seconds on the way down, 30 seconds on the way up.
That's really hard, by the way.
Oh, it's incredibly hard. And then the second, this is how hard it is. The second one, you can try to shoot for 30 seconds, probably going to be like 25. And then the next one's going to be like 15. And then when you get to like a normal pace, okay, just, you're done. So that's how, that's one very easy technique, is just do everything at the slowest like possible pace you can do it at. Another way to do this would be, so like if you do push-ups, you know, you're only doing both hands at the same time. But why don't you do one-arm push-ups? It's, hey, I'm a small guy and I have a pretty strong chest. One-arm push-ups are still pretty damn hard.
They are hard.
Like, I'm not sitting there doing 50 of them. And if I could do 50 of them, then I could just use that super slow motion too. I could do one-arm push-ups super slow. And if you don't think that you can get a good leg workout without weights, do pistol squats. That's a one-legged squat. Those are so, so hard.
I can't do pistol squats, straight up.
I'm getting better at them, mm-hmm. but I'm still, I don't even think I can do 10.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe if I, you know, had some money on it or something, I could probably...
Yeah, if I had a gun to my head, maybe.
But even then, like, I'll still fall over a couple times. By the time I get to, like, 4 or 5, I start shaking quite a bit and, you know, start falling over. So, like, there's a lot of easy ways to just, you know, make it even harder. Or you can even do, like, a superset or, like, a monster set where you do multiple exercises back to back to back. So, for example, like, 50-pound dumbbells... You know what, that's a little bit too light for me to do a goblet squat with them. But what I can do is I can do a pistol squat. That's very hard for me. Then I can pick up those 50-pound dumbbells, do some straight-legged deadlifts or Romanian deadlifts. Those are pretty hard, 50 pounds in each hand, 100 pounds. That's good enough to really fatigue my hamstrings, especially since they're already tired from those pistol squats. And then I can do a goblet squat right after that.
And now that 50 pounds feels like 100 pounds.
Oh, yeah, 50 pounds is too heavy at that point.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You can also do, for something like shoulders, you can do lateral raises, front raises, and then do your military press at the end. So if you're only using 15 pounds for those lateral raises, after you do lateral raises and front raises, those 15 pounds feel like 50s when you're doing the military press.
I did something very similar this morning. With my training shoulders, I do a monster set. So I did one set of side laterals, then I went transitioned directly into a military press, and... When your shoulders are already smoked from side laterals, you can't go that heavy on a military press. It's just hard.
Yeah, so like, yeah, if you're traveling and you don't have a lot of equipment, you don't have a lot of time or anything like that, there's no excuses. You can still get a great workout in.
All right, well, that's another episode in the books. Thank you for listening. We're going to start another series maybe next week, kind of diving into supplements. So if you have any supplements you want us to look into specifically, please reach out. I'm thinking we'll touch on... a lot of things, you know, things from vitamins and minerals to maybe leucine, creatine, other sort of like muscle building supplements, and really do a deep dive on those so we can recommend some good ones to you guys. But again, you can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. Any questions, comments, concerns, you can reach out at tntwellnessandnutrition@gmail.com. You can find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all those places.
Yeah, look for our logo. It's the flexing bicep and the blue heart. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.